Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to The Fandom Files. We're a Sci-Fi Wire podcast about people who really, really love stuff. I'm Jordan Zachert, I'm the features editor here at Sci-Fi Wire, and I'm flying solo on this one, kind of literally, because this interview was recorded in L.A. a few weeks back, and I flew to L.A. all by my big boy self. Pretty cool, right? I can fly on a plane by myself. Speaking of big boys, which always a good transition, speaking of big boys, I'm joined on this episode by Godzilla King of the Monsters director Michael Daugherty. All of our loyal Fandom File listeners know, I am a gigantic Godzilla fan. I talk about it nonstop. It's like my fandom. And so, you know, I was pumped to see the movie and do this interview. Mike is just as passionate, you know, he maybe even more, you know, he knows his stuff inside and out, and he just fills the movie with just so many endless references and Easter eggs, just from, you know, 30 previous Godzilla movies. It's unbelievable. To keep track of them is almost impossible, as hard as I tried. And the thing is, as many as there are, they're so organic to the story. You know, they fold in well, they make sense. It's not like, you know, he did anything gratuitous or sticking out or, you know, bent, you know, backwards to get some reference in that doesn't need to be there. They all work. It's kind of an amazing synthesis of so many years of Godzilla, plus, you know, Mothra, King Ghidorah, and Rodan movies. I talked to him about that. So, you know, I'm seeing the movie again tonight. It's my birthday. Godzilla movie coming out on my birthday. Kind of perfect. So I can take it all in without furiously taking notes, but I'll definitely be looking for more little references because he was a little bit, you know, we talked a lot about them in the interview, but I definitely know there's more than the ones I mentioned. So also in the interview, you know, we talked about, you know, the ideas behind the movie, his fandom growing up, all that good stuff. He was also concerned that we don't spoil anyone. So, you know, consider this right here, a big fat spoiler warning from here on out, if you care about little references in Godzilla. And, you know, just if you haven't seen the movie in general, you know, you might want to put it on pause, go see the movie, then listen to this, the rest of it. If you don't care and just want to hear two guys geeking out about Godzilla and not worried about spoilers, then keep on listening. So what are you going to do when you're done with this weekend? Are you going to just sleep or more press?
No, I'm going to wander on the Hollywood Boulevard and turn to dust. yeah, there's more events planned. We got Tokyo this weekend.
Ooh.
And that's immediately followed by London.
When you were making this, did you like fly a lot to go visit Tokyo and Toho and all them, speak with them?
Yeah, there were a few trips to Tokyo to present creature designs to them, to show them a rough cut of the film. Final cut of the film. I'll go to Tokyo at the drop of a hat. I love that city so much.
I went there 3 years ago and I just got engaged and we're going to go, like, that's going to be part of our honeymoon.
Oh, wow.
I'm already excited, yeah.
Oh, God, you're in for a treat.
Yeah. I'm like, you know what? Let's just, we'll figure out the party. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm getting hungry just thinking about Tokyo.
So, I mean, you've been a lifelong fan of Godzilla and Monsters. And so, what was it that hooked you? What was the first time you saw it and what got you?
I mean, I started so early, so the exact moment, the exact memory is very fuzzy. I just know that there were a lot of Saturday mornings where I would pour a bowl of cereal and then watch the old Hanna-Barbera cartoon.
Oh, really?
And then that would bleed into my local station showing some of the old films. And then followed by Universal black and white monster movies. So Saturday mornings and afternoons were just a concentrated dose of monster cinema.
That's really, yeah. I remember seeing them on like Channel 11 and such, but I remember my friend having a bunch of VHSs and it was like a snow day. Mm-hmm. I remember like it was like a blizzard and we just like went through all of them. And like, what was it about like those monsters, you know, versus like Universal monsters or other monsters that were on TV that really, like, what was it about Kaiju?
I mean, I feel like their scale obviously is a huge part of the appeal to see something so massive, you know, tearing through our cities like sandcastles makes an impression. You know, and I think also just sort of their mysterious almost mythological connection to the ancient world. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea that they were even potentially more ancient than dinosaurs, but also that they're more than dinosaurs. Dinosaurs are strictly just animals, I believe. Right. And then the kaiju had an almost mythological layer to them, you know, that, you know, even going back to the original film, when a Japanese monk describes Godzilla as a god, you know, the idea that Kong and Mothra were both worshipped by groups of followers.
Yeah.
You know, there's a long history of the kaiju being portrayed as almost ancient deities more than just giant monsters. So I think there's almost like a Dungeons and Dragons quality to their universe.
You know, it was cool. I was really into it when I was younger, and then got back into it later on when Shin Godzilla was coming out. I started digging back into it I always remained a fan, but I've really started digging into it again. And I realized how political they all were. Mm-hmm. I knew the first one, obviously, what it meant. But even just there was a smog monster during the pollution era.
Yeah.
And so that's,
that one traumatized me as a kid. Yeah.
that was cool. Even just all monsters attack about latchkey kids and capitalism.
Yep.
And that to me was pretty cool too.
Yeah. No, I think that's part of the fun of the character in the series is that it kind of ages with you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you watched it as a kid and you were pulled in by the monster fights, which is completely natural reaction and a good one, great. But then I think what makes them true timeless classics is that you can go back as a more mature thinking adult and realize that there might have been layers that you missed.
Yeah.
And that those layers are very good for you to digest.
Yeah, even just Godzilla versus King Kong with the, about being TV rotting people's brains. That was
I think the Godzilla films were very much ahead of their time.
So how did this project come to you? You did a few movies, I think, with Legendarian, or at least one with Legendarian.
I did Trick or Treat and Krampus, both for Legendarian.
Right, and so did they know you were a big fan and bring it to you? Did you have to pitch? How did it all work?
They came to me. I was taking a break after finishing Krampus, and I had dinner with Alex Garcia, one of the execs there, and he first mentioned that Gareth wasn't coming back because he was still wrapping up Star Wars. And I think I said yes before he could even finish answering the question. I know it was a very quick yes. And we were off and running. I went home and came up with a very rough outline treatment for what I thought the broad strokes of the story could be.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did a writer's room to continue fleshing that out more. And then based off the work in that writer's room, Zach Shields and I went off to work on the script while we were also concurrently doing some early visual design work.
Okay, cool.
So it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun because, at the beginning stage, it's sort of carte blanche and, the world is your oyster. And it was more fun to sort of bring more and more artists into the fold and watch it start to take shape.
Did they give you, since, I don't know how far along, if at all, Gareth was with, coming up with ideas or, certainly with these, film universes, they kind of have sometimes a direction in mind. But did they have that for you, or they just said, go wild?
They said go wild, pretty much. I mean, they had been doing a lot of exploratory work. Legendary had been doing a lot of exploratory work on their own, and fleshing out sort of ideas and concepts they had for the universe. The idea of focusing on Monarch and really sort of revealing the kinds of equipment and characters that might populate that, and also doing a deeper dive on sort of the mythological angle mm-hmm. of the creatures. So it was a natural fit. I walked in and I saw a lot of the work that they had done, and this is perfect. This is exactly what I had in mind about where to take things. So that's when you know you've got a good creative partner, is that you are in sync with each other, but also challenging and pushing each other to do even better.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing about, there's a million interesting things, but what's interesting to me is that there's no set. There's so many times there have been different origin stories for all these monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Godzilla's at one point was a dinosaur in 1942,
right.
And so, Ghidorah's generally from space, but then he was made him mechanical for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So do they have any, is there any sort of official, unofficial canon, or they just said, whatever you want the origin to be, go for it?
I had so much freedom, so much flexibility to do what I wanted to. They just wanted to make sure it was a good story that Godzilla fans would love, but that general audiences would also embrace.
Yeah.
And so the specifics within that, they were completely flexible with. They said, ideally, it would be great to use Ghidorah, Rodan, and Mothra. And my reaction was like, oh, no, twist my arm, not that. You know, I mean, it's like you couldn't have asked for a better setup or tee off from the company.
Right.
They are a company populated and run by geeks and fans. So I think they just naturally get the direction it should take.
Well, a lot of things excited me about this movie was the way you kind of weave in certain, you know, nods, calling, you know, Ghidorah Monster Zero, or even with, you know, we'll run this part after the movie's out, so it's not a spoiler, but even just, you know, the fairy from, you know, Mothra, you know, that sort of thing. Obviously, as a big fan, you're like, I got to work in some of these things. Was that like organic to the script writing process, or did you pepper that in later on once you had the story correct?
It's a combination. I mean, writing is so much like painting.
Yeah.
You know, it's like painting a mural because there's so many different little layers and subtleties that you try to lace in there. Some came very quickly and easily, like, you know, the idea that Ghidorah's code name would be Monster Zero first.
Sure.
You know, that they didn't identify it so that they sort of had a generic ID for it. And that only later, you know, through research via Dr. Chen, did they finally discover the creature's name. The idea of, like, saving Ghidorah's name for later on in the film so that he was a little bit more mysterious and cryptic. That was a no-brainer, bringing in the Oxygen Destroyer.
Right, yeah.
But I was pretty adamant about finding a way to introduce a sort of grounded version of the twins.
Right, yeah.
You know, the idea that, sure, maybe there is a mysterious sect of women who have a lineage of being identical twins that might have some strange, almost spiritual connection to Mothra.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really fascinating. And I've always loved the twins because they were very strong characters,
yeah,
despite their size. You know, that's something I love about the Godzilla franchise is that, you know, strong female characters, which are being touted as such a priority in today's genre films, they've always been there.
Right.
You know, they've always been there in the Godzilla films. They've always been there in a lot of our favorite sci-fi and horror films. So in a lot of ways, I just felt like I was continuing a natural tradition. But yeah, finding these Easter eggs, finding these little nods to the past legacy is such a huge fun part of the process, because I'm waiting to sit back now and see how many of the fans catch them all. You know?
I was taking notes.
Did you catch the Mazers?
I did not.
Great.
I'm going to see it again. You know what So one thing I did love was the battle at the ballpark, because that was like Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla 2. So it's not even, to me, that was like not even just like, oh, a little reference zone in there. That's like working it organically into the thing.
Yeah, it's an endless playground, especially when you're working digitally and you can go in and change and add things up to the very last minute.
Yeah.
You know, like the end credit sequence, for example, you know, that was done while we were doing the final mix on the film. And it sort of became a place to just continue to pepper little things. So if you pay very close attention to the news headlines and the authors of those news headlines,
yes,
you might catch things. I mean, even the news agency that Raymond Burr's character worked with in the 56 version is represented in this film.
That's the sort of thing where it's like you could go forever on that kind of stuff.
I mean, because to me, it's like as a filmmaker, it is fun for me to reward the audience for paying attention.
Yeah.
And that comes from decades of watching things. And this is going to sound like a random reference.
No,
but like,
no.
The airplane movies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I still notice sight gags and weird little things they did that I never picked up on before. Like, even in the end credits, they will do things that will make you laugh out loud if you take the time to pay attention.
I was really trying to notate, like, all the names of the 17 monsters in there, seeing, like, is there any sort of, like, hint in there? Because
it's a fun rabbit hole to go down. If you pay attention to the creatures' names and do the research on what the mythological references are.
Yeah.
Because all the creatures are named after existing mythological entities.
Okay.
It's a fun sort of path to explore. And then if you pay attention again to the end credits, to the redacted text, there's a whole puzzle to put together there.
Well, I'm going to go again. It's going to be my birthday's coming up in a few weeks. So,
oh, great.
Yeah, I was able to, it's like an easy, my fiance will go with me because it's my birthday. So, you know, she has to go. But there's like, now you get to also design some of your own monsters and kind of enter them into the canon. One thing that really interested me was the one that kind of looked like a mammoth, you know, with the big, like, where is that? Which one is that named?
And that one is Behemoth.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is named after a biblical creature.
Okay.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites too, because something I realized as we were talking about designing some new creatures was that they're always, almost always, insectoid or reptilian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and there aren't a lot of mammals. There's Kong, there's King Caesar.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. If he's a mammal, I guess. Yeah.
There's the gargantuas. And even then, they're almost kind of vaguely primate.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, I wanna come up with a creature that feels like it would have surfaced during the Ice Age.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I've always loved woolly mammoths. But if you really look at the body of the creature, it's a hybrid of sort of a mammoth. There's a bit of giant sloth in its claws.
Mm-hmm.
And even some primate body features. But, yeah, it's fun to come up with creatures, come up with backstories for them, and hopefully, you know, add some creatures to the canon that, you know, spark to different people's imaginations.
That's what's interesting is that, like, you know, I'm watching this as someone who grew up loving Godzilla movies. This might be someone's first Godzilla movie.
Yeah.
And, like, Behemoth is, you know, just as much of a legit character as, I don't know, like, Ibira or whoever else, you know?
Well, nothing would flatter me more if yeah, they fans emotionally imprint on some of these new creatures and then run off and do their own fan fiction or fan art. That's something I really love about the Godzilla fan base, especially on social media, is that it's inspiring a whole new generation of artists that are flooding me with their with their drawings. And they remind me of my own drawings growing up.
Oh, I can only imagine. One other thing I loved was, you know, when I talk about organically working things in, you know, even, you know, Godzilla glowing red, destroys one of my favorite movies. And that sort of thing where you don't have to know that happened, and, you know, but it also really does help.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of nod.
Yeah. To me, it's, you know, it's a love letter to him as a character and his legacy, and one that I think, you know, Godzilla fans will appreciate, but it was important to me that new Godzilla fans are born out of this film.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that you don't have to understand, that it's a reference, and maybe you'll enjoy it more if you do later on discover that it's a reference to an earlier piece, but that if you're new to the character and the franchise, that you're just enjoying it for what it is.
You know, last time on the red carpet, someone mentioned, it might have been O'Shea, he said there was like one practical effect with Godzilla's skin or something that they touched. What was the thought behind that?
He was referring to the moment when, again, spoiler territory.
Yeah, we'll hold
that. But yeah, there's a key moment when a character makes physical contact with Godzilla on his snout. And so we had a piece of skin for that actor to actually interact with versus just, you know, a big blue cushion or something. Yeah.
Was that for you as a fan, like, pretty cool to even just have?
Having any piece of the creatures matters to me.
Yeah.
You know, at one point there was a scene where Millie was supposed to back up into Ghidorah's tooth. So we built a tooth that was like 9 feet tall. I wish I had that. I could use it as a bench or something. you know, in a franchise where practical effects were so important, it was great just to have any flake of skin possible or piece of tooth just to sort of continue that tradition in whatever way we could.
You know, maybe I was just seeing things because I was on a long flight before I saw the movie, but it felt like there was one moment almost maybe it was supposed to look like this, but it wasn't. I could be entirely wrong. But it looked like there was like one moment where like a train looked like a miniature. Right? Maybe I'm wrong. But I was like, is that? But I guess I'm wrong. I was, there was one moment like when the train was moving, but.
Yeah, we definitely didn't have a miniature train.
That's really, do you feel like that's possible to ever have like a movie, like a monster movie with miniatures and suits ever again? Or is it just, we passed that point?
I mean, I think we could.
Yeah.
it would definitely be a very conscious aesthetic choice at this point, especially because our brains and eyeballs have gotten so used to the realism of CG. Whether you could do it and make it a serious giant monster film, I don't know. You could easily do, you know, man in suit process again if you wanted to do something more fanciful or stylized or, you know, comedic maybe. But I think it's a worthy experiment for some future Godzilla fan slash director to take on.
Do you ever see yourself going back to the MonsterVerse?
Yeah, I mean, anything is possible.
Yeah.
I love the idea of the film series continuing. I love the idea of taking this into television. You know, I feel like the world that we've left this film on definitely has a lot of different implications that are worth exploring both on the big screen and on the small screen.
It's interesting to have like a monster show, you know, because they have like, you know, superhero shows, you know, spun off from movies, but like a monster show, like mostly about the humans and not the, I guess the monsters for the most part.
Maybe.
Yeah. That's really cool. Well, I got to get rolling. Thank you so much, man.
This
really
thank you.
It's a thrill to see the movie and cool to talk to you.